23. I wish Bob Ewell wouldn't chew tobacco, was all Atticus said about it. According to Miss Stephanie Crawford, however, Atticus was leaving the post office when Mr. Ewell approached him, cursed him, spat on him, and threatened to kill him. Miss Stephanie, who by the time she had told it twice, was there and had seen it all, passing by from the jitney jungle she was. Miss Stephanie said Atticus didn't bat an eye, just took out his handkerchief and wiped his face, and stood there and let Mr. Ewell call him names wild horses could not bring her to repeat. Mr. Ewell was a veteran of an obscure war. That, plus Atticus's peaceful reaction, probably prompted him to inquire, "Too proud to fight, you nigger-loving bastard?" Miss Stephanie said Atticus said, "No, too old," put his hands in his pockets, and strolled on. Miss Stephanie said you had to hand it to Atticus Finch. He could be right dry sometimes. Jim and I didn't think it entertaining. "After all, though," I said, "he was the deadest shot in the county one time. He could, you know, he wouldn't carry a gun, Scout. He ain't even got one," said Jim. "You know, he didn't even have one down at the jail that night. He told me having a gun around's an invitation to somebody to shoot you." "This is different," I said. "We can ask him to borrow one." We did, and he said, "Nonsense." Dill was of the opinion that an appeal to Atticus's better nature might work. After all, we would starve if Mr. Ewell killed him, besides be raised exclusively by Aunt Alexandra, and we all knew the first thing she'd do before Atticus was under the ground good would be to fire Calpurnia. Jim said it might work if I cried and flung a fit, being young and a girl. That didn't work either. But when he noticed us dragging around the neighborhood, not eating, taking little interest in our normal pursuits, Atticus discovered how deeply frightened we were. He tempted Jim with a new football magazine one night. When he saw Jim flip the pages and toss it aside, he said, "What's bothering you, son?" Jim came to the point. "Mr. Ewell."
"What has happened?"
"Nothing's happened. We're scared for you, and we think you ought to do something about him." Atticus smiled wryly. "Do what? Put him under a peace bond?" "When a man says he's going to get you, looks like he means it."
"He meant it when he said it," said Atticus.
"Jim, see if you can stand in Bob Ewell's shoes a minute." I destroyed his last shred of credibility at that trial, if he had any to begin with. The man had to have some kind of comeback. His kind always does. So if spitting in my face and threatening me saved Maella Ewell one extra beating, that's something I'll gladly take. He had to take it out on somebody, and I'd rather it be me than that house full of children out there. You understand? Jim nodded. Aunt Alexandra entered the room as Atticus was saying, "We don't have anything to fear from Bob Ewell. He got it all out of his system that morning." "I wouldn't be so sure of that, Atticus," she said. "His kind of do anything to pay off a grudge. You know how those people are." "What on earth could Ewell do to me, sister?"
"Something furtive," Aunt Alexandra said. "You may count on that."
"Nobody has much chance to be furtive and make 'em," Atticus answered. After that, we were not afraid. Summer was melting away, and we made the most of it. Atticus assured us that nothing would happen to Tom Robinson until the higher court reviewed his case, and that Tom had a good chance of going free, or at least of having a new trial. He was at Enfield Prison Farm, 70 miles away in Chester County.
I asked Atticus if Tom's wife and children were allowed to visit him, but Atticus said no. If he loses his appeal, I asked one evening, what'll happen to him?
He'll go to the chair, said Atticus, unless the governor commutes his sentence.
Not time to worry yet, Scout. We've got a good chance.
Jim was sprawled on the sofa reading Popular Mechanics. He looked up.
It ain't right. He didn't kill anybody, even if he was guilty. He didn't take anybody's life.
You know rape's a capital offense in Alabama, said Atticus.
Yes, sir, but the jury didn't have to give him death. If they wanted to, they could have gave him 20 years.
Given, said Atticus. Tom Robinson's a colored man, Jim. No jury in this part of the world's going to say, we think you're guilty, but not very. On a charge like that, it was either a straight acquittal or nothing.
Jim was shaking his head. I know it's not right, but I can't figure out what's wrong. Maybe rape shouldn't be a capital offense.
Atticus dropped his newspaper beside his chair. He said he didn't have any quarrel with the rape statute, none whatever, but he did have deep misgivings when the state asked for and the jury gave a death penalty on purely circumstantial evidence. He glanced at me, saw I was listening, and made it easier. I mean, before a man is sentenced to death for murder, say, there should be one or two eyewitnesses. Someone should be able to say, yes, I was there and saw him pull the trigger. But lots of folks have been hanged on circumstantial evidence, said Jim.
I know, and lots of them probably deserved it too.
But in the absence of eyewitnesses, there's always a doubt. Sometimes only the shadow of a doubt. The law says reasonable doubt, but I think a defendant's entitled to the shadow of a doubt. There's always the possibility, no matter how improbable, that he's innocent.
Then it all goes back to the jury, then. We ought to do away with juries.
Jim was adamant. Atticus tried hard not to smile, but couldn't help it.
You're rather hard on us, son. I think maybe there might be a better way. Change the law. Change it so that only judges have the power of fixing the penalty in capital cases.
Then go up to Montgomery and change the law.
You'd be surprised how hard that'd be. I won't live to see the law changed, and if you live to see it, you'll be an old man.
This was not good enough for Jim. No, sir, they ought to do away with juries. He wasn't guilty in the first place, and they said he was.
If you had been on that jury, son, and 11 other boys like you, Tom would be a free man, said Atticus. So far, nothing in your life has interfered with your reasoning process. Those are 12 reasonable men in everyday life, Tom's jury. But you saw something come between them and reason. You saw the same thing that night in front of the jail. When that crew went away, they didn't go as reasonable men. They went because we were there. There's something in our world that makes men lose their heads. They couldn't be fair if they tried. In our courts, when it's a white man's word against a black man's, the white man always wins. They're ugly, but those are the facts of life.
Doesn't make it right, said Jim stolidly. He beat his fist softly on his knee.
You just can't convict a man on evidence like that. You can't.
You couldn't, but they could, and did. The older you grow, the more of it you'll see. The one place where a man ought to get a square deal is in a courtroom. Be he any color of the rainbow, but people have a way of carrying their resentments right into a jury box.
As you grow older, you'll see white men cheat black men every day of your life. But let me tell you something, and don't you forget it. Whenever a white man does that to a black man, no matter who he is, how rich he is, or how fine a family he comes from, that white man is trash.